you. Come back again next Thursday, 3 o'clock to 4 o'clock, and listen to Free Voices. And thank you, Lady Fahima, for coming
You're
in.
You're very welcome. My honor.
Yes, so we're going to have to say bye for now. And thank you for all your wonderful words.
Yes,
and,
thank you.
Just lots of appreciation to you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Thank you so much.
Okay. Okay, bye for now.
Bye for now. Bye-bye.
Welcome to CanQueer, home of Canada's queer media. My name is Luke Smith.
And I am Sebastian. I am also using a different voice right now, in case you haven't perceived.
It's very bassy.
Yes, and it's a lead-in into an Australian study.
Oh, yes! This was a fantastic study. Entertaining study. Tell me more about this study that came out of Australia.
Well, the basic conclusion is when they did testing on a naive audience, so you just get people in and you don't really tell them what you're testing about, they could easily tell the difference between a gay man's voice and a straight man's voice, but they could not identify bisexual men's voices as being bisexual. And what's more, they actually found that on average, they judged the voices of bisexual men to be more masculine sounding on average than the heterosexual voices.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there actually are, in as much as there is such a thing as a bisexual stereotype, which there kind of isn't, but there kind of is, but not really. Within the community, there is sort of this sort of received knowledge, whether true or false, that bisexual men are on average more masculine than the gay identified ones. I think that's one of those things that if somebody did study it and then they could prove conclusively that your average person judges your average bisexual man to be more bisexual, I would go, oh, okay, I could see that. And if they said, actually, no, that's not true. That's when you actually put that in a lab environment, it shakes out to be something completely different. I would just sit there and be like, yeah, okay, yeah, fine. I could see that being a thing.
I was looking it up, being like, who are famously bisexual people that I'm like, that just give off straight vibes? But yeah, you're right. It is really hard to kind of identify folks who move in and out of queer spaces in such that way.
Well, David Bowie's a famous example.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
David Bowie just kind of gave off like artist vibes.
Mm.
You know, like, is he gay or is he European or is he just a painter? You know, there is that sort of thing. Like, you know, are they a queer activist or are they just color their hair green because they're a sound producer? Mm-hmm. You know, like there's that kind of a artist or queer kind of a vibe. And that's definitely a thing for sure. But I've seen similar studies to this in the past, judging, usually what they do is they call them gay sounding because you do have heterosexual men who have voices that are considered to be gay sounding. And if you want to get into celebrity examples, a lot of people had some comments about the speaking voice of Michael Jackson.
Oh, yes.
They also refer to it as the gay sounding voice because not all gay men have the gay sounding voice.
Mm-hmm.
So they say gay sounding and not gay, because then it's a little bit more accurate to what it is that you're studying. While also not stepping back from the fact that you are studying gay men.
Yeah.
I know that linguists have looked at it to see, like, what are the markers? And, you know, a lot of people say that they lisp. Well, then they started doing studies on, you know, tongue placement and lip rounding and all that. And they actually found that, no, the gay sounding voice is not about lisping. And they actually found weird things, like gay men pronounce their L's for a fraction of a song or longer.
Hmm.
So
what's a good L word that has
malicious?
Malicious?
Yeah.
Malicious.
Yeah.
Malicious.
You're gonna start saying
I'm just gonna say malicious over again. No, okay. Uh-huh. Okay. I can get behind that.
Okay.
It's worth noting for our audience that you studied as a linguist.
Yes, I did study as a linguist. So yes. But we're also talking about like 5 milliseconds longer.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So it fractional, but it, when you're talking about language, the human brain is a computer that can process language at super speeds. Like, mm-hmm. computers struggle to keep up with the human brain when it comes to processing language. But the human brain is designed around it. So, yeah. I mean, that's kind of a... It's sort of like a... What was the dolphin? I think it's like a third of its brain is dedicated just to the echolocation that it uses.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, we kind of have... It's not quite the similar thing because we don't have a giant protruding bulb on the front of our skulls.
Not yet.
The way that dolphins do.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, there are memes about people with giant protruding bulbs in the front of their skulls from having achieved enlightenment. But my favorite one is the one where the brain is so big they sit on it like a couch.
It makes me think, so, you know, maybe this ties into, I don't know, because I feel like how we sound is a reflection of the spaces that we are physically in.
It can be, but there is a weird phenomenon. It's the kind of thing that, like, I as a gay man who have traveled could say, but I think your average person, it would be non-PC for them to say it. When I lived in Hong Kong, there were a lot of Cantonese and Filipino people there. I did not speak Cantonese, I did not speak any of the Philippine languages, but I could still tell who the gay men were. There is that sort of like gay voice that transcends culture and language that is kind of...
It's the inflection, it's the speed, there's something about gay voice, we get that. But what I'm referring to here is looking at... neither of us are bisexual. We are practicing homosexuals.
Yes.
And... you don't know why I said practicing.
Well, my card's almost out of date. I got to renew it.
This is true.
But you renewed it on your birthday, just like a driver's license.
This is true. So, yeah. Everyone knows this.
Yes.
But yeah, so there... Where was I going with this? Oh, right, yes. Bisexual men.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think that's the piece here, because part of me is honestly wondering if... You know, when you are in a gay bar with other gay men, everyone sounds that much... gayer.
Well, also everyone's yelling because they're trying to hear each other over the music.
Over Britney's latest atrocity.
As well as everyone else who's also yelling over it.
Exactly, yeah. So my point here is that I feel like your intonations, etc., change depending on where you are. And I'm just wondering, do bisexual men sound less gay and therefore harder to spot because they're more often in straight spaces?
I don't know. I know there is that phenomenon. My family's noticed it. My partner's noticed it, that when I speak with other gay men, I sound more gay.
Mm.
When I speak with my family, I sound less gay.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what it is, but it is definitely a phenomenon for sure. Like my when I lived in Hamilton, my mother could tell which friends I was hanging out with
depending on how
gay I sounded when I got home.
I
don't know what it is, but there is that kind of exposure effect for sure. There's a distancing thing there as well, where there are sociolinguistic studies on this that actually mostly done in England, where people who are from like the East End, their Cockney accent is stronger when they speak to someone who does not have a Cockney accent.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're trying to... It's sort of like this distancing kind of thing.
Your accent gives you a sense, not just yourself, a sense of where you are.
Yeah.
But it's contextual clues for folks around you. Britain is beautiful for this.
It signals to other people.
You could be the other side of a large hill and have a different accent, which is just fantastic.
Absolutely. And it's sort of a social marker. And if you exaggerate your accent, it's a way of saying you are not one of us.
But what is bisexual accent? Does it evidently not. Because none of these Australians could spot a bi man. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
Like, that's... The perception of bi voices being more masculine, I think, is quite interesting.
Yes.
I'm wondering if it's just to the ear in this study that happened in Australia. I don't know. It's a conundrum.
Mm-hmm.
It is a conundrum.
Normally what they would do is they would give them sample sentences. I haven't read the details on the methodology for this.
But
I can tell you how these kinds of studies usually go, is people read a sample sentence. So they're not like, you know, the gay men are like, "Ooh, girl, yeah, I went out on the weekend for cocktails with the ladies." Like, no.
It's the same sentence.
It'll be something banal, like, "The bad goose chased the rabbit." Mm-hmm. Or it'll be something like that, and just everybody says that sentence, and then you judge it from that. So it tends to be very neutralized out, and it's purely just about the sound of the voice. It'll be the register, the tone. There's the, I can't remember the name of it, the range, the vocal range. So basically, like, a narrow vocal range would be like this, where you're speaking in a fairly flat tone, and a mm-hmm. wider vocal range would be like this, where you go up and down and up and down. So, that actually is one of the reasons why Michael Jackson, a lot of people perceived him as being gay, because his voice, when he spoke, went up and down quite a bit. So it was not just like, oh, I have a new album coming out. I have a new album coming out. And it'd be something mm-hmm. very wide range. And that is typically perceived as being more gay. But then there are communities of English speakers that do that as well. So the African-American accent from the northern states has a very wide range.
Yeah.
From the southern states has a narrower range. You got all these regional differences. It's really interesting. But there's little cues that you can pick up on, things like that. The depth of your voice, how long you speak. We don't really have vocal length as much anymore, but they do have that in England, where like Mary and Mary are two different words mm-hmm. according to how long you pronounce the E. So Mary, Mary.
Yeah, one would be like merriment, and the other one would be a wedding.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Marry, marry.
Yeah. In parts of England.
Although I'm Wales, so it would be marry.
Marry. Well, yeah. There's also Mary the name.
Oh, that'd be Mary.
Exactly.
Oh my God, Mary and Mary are also very much the same. When I was a kid, it always amazed me growing up that year, and year were four different words. Mm. All right, let's move on to something
completely different.
Completely different. What I wanted to talk about, I loved this story. I thought this was fantastic, and our listeners can probably agree. Pride PEI announced after the premier of PEI was caught saying things that they were like, this is distasteful. Mm. Anyway, so they announced that they are not going to allow politicians in the PEI Pride Parade.
Yes.
And I thought, yes, wonderful. If only we could just ban politicians from other places. That'd be excellent.
If I had to choose between banning politicians and banning banks, I would rather ban the banks. But the politicians are a very close second. Yeah.
Anyway, PEI has now clarified.
Yes.
PEI Pride has clarified it, which is less fun. They're not necessarily banning politicians as people. They are banning politicians from doing having a partisan presence.
Yes.
Which I think is actually a beautifully nuanced way of rolling this out. Mm-hmm. They're not saying you can't march in this parade.
Yes.
You as an individual can march in this parade mm-hmm. because parades are for queer folks and our allies to take up and demonstrate in that space. Mm-hmm. But you cannot be a walking billboard for your next election campaign.
Yeah.
You know, it's about... You're either here for the message, mm-hmm. and if you're here for your message, we don't want you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Which is excellent. It's that same underlying reasoning behind what I feel was behind that allowing police officers to march as people versus police officers marching with a rainbow-wrapped patrol car and, you know.
Yeah, I remember there was a lot of controversy around that. I thought the Ottawa Police actually came up with a pretty good solution a few years ago where the Ottawa Police marched but wearing polos with branding on it, but it was not a uniform.
They split the difference. Yeah. Like, this isn't our... Because also...
The full uniform for police includes the vest and the gun. It's part of the uniform. If you don't have the gun on you, you're out of uniform.
And most people don't know this, but if they are in a parade, mm-hmm. they can't respond if they're not in the right outfits. Like, if something happened, they're not allowed to respond if they're not equipped appropriately.
But yeah, so a service uniform would split the difference. They could march in that. They don't have the air of a state-enforced authority. They are not the branch of the law. They are not the action branch of the judicial system. They're just people in uniforms who are there to service the community, which is a different vibe.
Yeah, I mean, the idea of them in uniform still, I think, is part of the broader debate, but it was definitely a strong step in the right direction.
Yes.
Because queer folks know that when they see, for many queer folks, their memories of interacting with the police is being rounded up and pushed in the back of paddy wagons, you know what I mean?
But it's so interesting because especially if you talk to the older generations, a lot of them are like, I love seeing police in the parade, especially when they're uniform, because it means they finally have our backs. They see that as a symbol of times are changing. They're like, I know the past, I was there. But
the younger queers are like, I don't like seeing them in the parade because they still don't have our backs. And then they point to...
But they do, because... No. Okay. But it...
We continue to disagree on this, but let's just...
If somebody broke into your house right now and you called the police, they would show up. If they showed up... Well, I mean, we're also in the suburbs. That's a million miles from anywhere. Interesting.
We interviewed folks in Toronto and said, if you were mugged in the street at knife point, would you call the police? And they told me, no, because I'd be more hassled by the police than the guy that mugged me with a knife.
Well, Toronto police, though.
They're a whole separate kind of fish. Yeah.
Ask the people in Durham region who have the best reputation in the province.
Ask someone where there's nice police.
Yeah, ask someone that's in not, York region. Ask somebody in Halton.
That's not really... I mean, you know, like that. I feel like you're making my point for me now.
Well, yeah.
All right, let's jump to our first track. This is Igloo by Okan. This is a fantastic track. It is it's a land track, and we will be back just after this.
Si tú supieras lo que me provoca tu mirada, no te atrevieras a dejar pasar la madrugada cuando me dejas. Y viene con un cuento. Siento que ardo por dentro. Dame aquello que te pedí. No me dejes tirada aquí. Ya no sé cómo conseguir que quiera más y más y más. Solo quiero que seas tú la que venga a apagar la luz. Y me dejes con un calor que derritamos un iglú.
Welcome back to Cangria, home of Canada's queer media. My name remains Luke Smith.
And I'm Sebastian.
Now, I did want to mention a couple of Canadian stories. Let's get through them and get them out of the way. Now, first off, is we talked about some flags and things that got stolen in Waterloo. Was it Waterloo? Windsor, Waterloo?
Oh, there is flags stolen all over the province.
They're all over the province. Mm-hmm. Anyway, at the start of July, we talked about a man who was then arrested for this mischief.
Okay.
Somebody was seen removing pride signs from the windows of businesses and making threatening comments.
Mm-hmm.
There were more thefts the next week. Like, this guy was on a mission going around town taking down pride flags on Ainslie Street in Cambridge and Main Street in Cambridge.
Okay, okay.
It was Main Street. Anyway, a 59-year-old Cambridge man was then arrested July 9th and charged with 6 counts of mischief under 5,000 and 1 count of uttering threats. He has since been charged again with 3 counts of theft and attempted theft and mischief under 5,000. So being a dick, going around town stealing all of the signs and pride flags, equals, what was that, about a half dozen charges on mischief under 5,000. I think my point here is, what? You cannot stroll down Main Street, go up to businesses and take their stuff because you don't like it.
Not without an exchange of currency anyway.
Exactly. I mean, just how ridiculous is
part
this?
Part of my brain is like, let's say that I was sympathetic to a homophobe and I was like, yes, me too. I would still say that's a bit much, and don't you have like a hobby or a family or a job?
But
or
the audacity!
That's a lot of time.
The gall to feel like, to feel so self-entitled that your opinion on this means that you can walk up to other people's property, take it down, grumble, complain, and threaten, and move about your business, and expect no consequences?
I've seen people walking around neighborhoods tearing signs off of lampposts. You know, like, you know, printed at home and just strapped up with some gaffer tape of some variety.
Yeah, yeah.
And half the time I'm like, that's...
You know, it's an eyesore.
I'm fine with that. I'm fine with you tearing things off of lampposts. But that's something completely different
than tearing down flags that businesses have put up. I don't know. It's for me, this is, I mean, good on Cambridge Police, I suppose, for following through and continuing their prosecution here.
Mm-hmm.
But just sometimes it makes me think, like, we had that grumpy old man out in BC who yelled at this small child and made a 9-year-old girl cry.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it's like, why is this, there's this sense of entitlement where people believe they can get away with this? Like, it's that's not normal behavior. Come on now. Do better.
Uh-huh.
Do better.
That's your response.
Do better.
Okay.
Actually, it reminds me, we might play a short clip right now. There is a new Fox News host who just started his new job, and his mum called.
Yeah.
His mother called into the show and told him not to be a conspiracy theorist and to just mind your business about other people's bodies.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, you know, when it comes to something, when a news reporter's mum is phoning in to tell them to do better, you know, I would die of embarrassment if my mother phoned in to tell me to do better. But, you know, maybe she should. I don't know. Moving on, let's talk about gay water.
Okay, yes. This surprised me when I read this because I bartended in a gay bar for about 3 years, on and off. Well, cumulatively about 3 years. It was spread out over about 5, but still. I had never heard this term for a specific mixed drink that I do not ever remember serving. So apparently, in quote-unquote the gay world, the mixing of vodka and soda is so common in gay bars that they call it gay water. Now, in my time, this is actually something that I've surprised a lot of people with. In my time working in the gay bar, the number one thing that I did was pull pints. Just, we had domestic and usually a premium on tap, and I would just pull pints and half pints all day. Sometimes I would open bottles of beer. Sometimes I would pour a glass of wine, But other than beer, the thing that I did most often was like, Ryan Ginger, Ryan Coke, Rum and Coke, that kind of thing. Very simple. I don't ever remember pouring a vodka soda, ever once. So I don't know. I mean, maybe it was just, I was also in Hamilton, and Hamilton has sort of a rough and tumble reputation. So maybe that's it. And, you know, a lot of people assume that people go in and they ask for fancy drinks like Cosmos and whatnot. And yeah, I made those a few times. Sunday mornings, a lot of people came in and asked for Caesars. Of course, they refer to them as breakfast. So that was a common thing. So, you know, I'll have a breakfast, please. And that was, you know, you just make a Caesar for them. If they call it breakfast, you go a little bit light on the Tabasco. That's the only difference. If they call it a Caesar, go heavy on the Tabasco. But anyway, if the bar was slow, people would often experiment with fancy drinks, but people didn't like being a burden, so they didn't want to ask for something that takes 4 minutes to make because they didn't want to annoy the other customers. They didn't want to take up more space than they felt comfortable with. The only thing that I made on a regular basis was there was one customer who regularly asked for Monte Cristos, which is a cocktail involving hot coffee. So I'd have to go and put on the coffee machine, which is fine by me because I drank a lot of coffee anyway. So it was,
having a pot on the go is probably a good thing.
Not a bad thing, exactly. Yeah. So, I mean, this whole gay water thing, I don't know. It's kind of weird, but apparently, maybe it's a New York or San Francisco or Miami or LA thing.
I think I think you're right. I think it's an American thing. So Spencer Hudson, who was the former head of corporate social at Yahoo,
okay,
became a bit of a TikTok influencer talking about his life as a millennial gay.
Okay.
And has found wasn't being challenged or learning or growing in much the same way as he used to be in terms of his tech job. Mm-hmm. And has started up a side business where you can get a can of gay water, mm-hmm, TM.
Yeah.
And it is literally a vodka soda in a can.
Yeah.
With a bit of lime.
With a bit of lime.
And he hopes that this new branded drink, gay water, will help to destigmatize the word gay, normalize the word gay in terms of the beverage industry. I don't know if gay needs a rebranding.
I also don't think a mixed alcoholic beverage is going to do that work. I think you get a lot more out of, positive role models in the media.
Is a lovely looking can.
I think Neil Patrick Harris having a stable relationship with his husband and adopting two children has done more for gay men than an alcoholic beverage will. Because I remember when Neil Patrick Harris came out, got married, started adopting kids, and people started asking him stuff, and he's like, why would I be in an open relationship with my husband and two kids? Like, a lot of the stereotypes about gay men, and he was just like, no, just shut that down. And that kind of did a lot of positive. Mm-hmm. And people be like, well, you know, there's people out there who are blah, 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 and Neil Patrick Harris was like, yeah, that's fine, because it's a plurality. There's more than one way of being a gay man. I'm one of them. Congratulations, you just met a stable, monogamous, family-oriented gay man. They exist. Get over it. Which was such a weird thing of being like, yeah, I mean, I don't want to say a normal, but basically I'm a normal, but also gay. Why is that shocking? I don't know if a canned beverage is going to fix the world.
You know, I'm like, you do you. Make the side hustle, you know, build a business. Honestly, RTDs, ready to drink, pour over drinks, are where the industry is. Mm-hmm. He's tapping in at the right moment. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think he's doing really well. Honestly, if it was gay water, vodka soda-ish, but was non-alcoholic, I'm like, okay, that's kind of cool. That would be worth talking about.
That would just be a soda with lime in it.
Okay, you've got me there. But, you know, I don't know. As long as he doesn't go prosecuting people, you know, for damages if they use the word gay in other products, we'll see. But, yeah, gay water bubbling up in the news. Although, it's a soda, so it definitely has bubbles.
Okay, yeah.
Certainly quite the thing going on.
I mean, on the one hand, it kind of sounds refreshing, but, I mean, if I were to get a refreshing beverage in the summer, I would... you know what my favorite...
It's a gin and tonic.
Well, my favorite summer cocktail.
Oh, is it a Long Island iced tea?
No. Close, but no. Just iced tea, plain old iced tea, and gin. And garbage gin as well, because like if you get your garbage gin, it's or like oh, it's like you're sucking on a juniper bush. Mm-hmm. But when you mix that with iced tea, you want that intense flavor.
My favorite one is let me see if I can find it, because there was a Quebec gin, which was like licking the forest floor.
Yeah, a lot of them are like that. Yeah.